From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Within the past few days, 38 writers from more than 30 different countries have arrived in Iowa. They're the newest residents of the University of Iowa's International Writing Program. Since 1967, more than 1,200 writers from more than 120 countries have taken part in this one-of-a-kind residency. This hour, we'll be talking with resident writers who have just arrived in Iowa from Russia, Pakistan, and New Zealand. Also, the program's director, poet and essayist Christopher Merrill. We'll see how their work is informed by current events and what they hope to accomplish during their 10 weeks in Iowa. That's all coming up right after this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Within the past few days, 38 writers from more than 30 different countries have arrived in Iowa. They are the newest residents of the University of Iowa's International Writing Program. Since its founding in 1967, more than 1,200 writers from more than 120 countries have attended the IWP. This hour, we'll be talking with three resident writers who have just arrived in Iowa, along with the IWP's director. Let me introduce the writers we have in our studios at Iowa Public Radio in Iowa City. Alan Cherchesov is a fiction writer from Russia. Good afternoon to you, Alan.
Good afternoon.
H.M. Naqvi is a fiction writer from Pakistan who lives in Karachi. Good afternoon to you, H.M.
Good afternoon.
And we have Hinamwana Baker from New Zealand, a poet. Good afternoon to you.
Kia ora.
Kia ora, that's... Kia ora, is that the greeting in
yes,
Maori?
Yes, it's one of them.
One of them.
Yeah,
We'll hear others during the hour. Christopher Merrill is with us, director, poet, author, essayist, director of the International Writing Program. Welcome to you, Chris.
Nice to be back, Ben.
So I would like to just go around looking at your faces here and to have you tell us a little bit about who you are and what sort of writing you do. Who would like to start us off? H.M., would you please?
I spent my childhood in Pakistan, and I've been writing since I was six. I have worked in the financial services industry. I've run a poetry slam venue in Washington, D.C., and I taught creative writing at Boston University. And while I was destitute, I commenced this novel, Homeboy, which is about three young Pakistani men contending with changed socio-political vicissitudes in post 9/11 America, but it is a comedy as well as an immigrant's novel and a Bildungsroman, a coming of age story. So there's a lot of I've attempted to fuse genres and styles into coherence.
Okay, so this is really, this Homeboy is a comment about all the turbulence that Pakistan has been through since 9/11. That was your inspiration, if we want to call it an inspiration?
My inspiration, Ben, was Tom Sawyer and Catcher in the Rye and Bright Lights, Big City. So there are those literary traditions that inform Homeboy, and yes, it is a political novel, but it has to do with an American context.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Alan Cherchesov, tell us about your writing and where it comes from and what you like to write about.
Well, actually, it's pretty different. I started writing about my homeland, which is North Ossetia. It is a small republic in the south of Russia. And actually, it is... mainly very well known because of its mountains and some very bad stories, unfortunate stories, like, for instance, the seizure of the hostages in the Beslan school 6 years ago.
Yes, we remember that.
Yeah. Well, my first novel, which is translated into English and is called Requiem for the Living, is a kind of not historical, but I would say a bit mythological thing, because it is devoted to our past, and at the same time, it is an attempt to explain the reality through our past. And our past is something inventional anyway, because we are not able to know it pretty well. All the time we are inventing our past, especially in Russia. It's unpredictable.
Inventing the past, does that mean revising the past?
Yes, all the time we are trying to revise the past. And actually, when you are out of roots and there are plenty of events which can prove it to you, you have to invent it, you have to revise it all the time. And that is why we have so many versions of our past. After that, I have written my second novel, which is also connected with my homeland and with the first one. But then I decided totally to change the direction, and my third novel was already kind of intellectual detective, totally devoted to literature itself, because the main character of my third novel is literature. So now I'm working on my fourth novel, which is Don Ivan, and it's a story about the contemporary Don Juan. So I'm very much hoping to finish it while I'm here.
Okay, Alan Cherchasov from Russia, a writer from Russia. Hinamwana Baker, you are from New Zealand. What draws you here, and what is your writing about?
Kia ora, Ben. I te tūtahi kei te mihi ahau ki te mana whenua o tēnei whenua i runga no i tō mana whenuatanga. Tēnei anō te mihi atu, mihi atu, mihi atu ki a koutou. Just acknowledging the traditional owners of the land that I'm walking on while I'm here, which is usually something that's... I need to do regularly to just ground myself when I get somewhere.
So that was acknowledging the Native American soil.
And I guess my dad is Maori. He's actually biracial, and that has
Maori is the native people of New Zealand.
Yeah, the native people of New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And my mum is from the European New Zealand line, so she goes back to Germany and England and Holland and lots of different places. But I guess my first book in particular is exploring how it is to be, you know, from two different places. In New Zealand, you're really only allowed to be one or the other, and all of the other many cultures that exist in New Zealand are pretty invisible still. So if you happen to be more than one, or you happen to be one of those other cultures, it takes a bit of negotiating. So I've written about that, and I guess my literary obsessions kind of revolve towards contemporary American poetry. I love sound poetry and language poetry and those kinds of things. So I guess I'm a bit of an anomaly in New Zealand even, mm-hmm. maybe less so here. It'll be interesting.
You've only been here a few days, but I understand you're very interested in Native American culture, the Native American peoples of Iowa.
Yeah.
What did you want to compare and contrast them with the Maori people?
I just want to get a little bit of brotherhood and sisterhood, I think, while I'm here. Make those connections that what we call whakawhanaungatanga, which is working on the relationship and the familiness of us all. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find that really important and inspiring in my work.
Thank you for those little introductions. So we get to know you a little bit. I want to turn to Alan Cherchasov right now because looking at the calendar, it's been nearly 20 years since the collapse of the Soviet Union.
Yeah, that's true.
It's hard to believe. A little bit closer to the microphone, if I could ask you, Alan. This initial period we experienced in the early 1990s was one of great hope for the citizens of the Soviet Union, especially in the area of press freedom and the media. How has that landscape changed in recent years? We've been hearing reports about that. What is it like for a writer, a journalist, in the former Soviet Union these days?
Well, it has changed significantly. Now, if we are speaking about the freedom of press or the freedom of speech, it is more a rhetorical thing. Mostly, it is something which the people even don't expect to have already. And it is quite amazing, because even 7 or 6 years ago, the situation was quite different. Mm-hmm. But after all that, it was a kind of probe from the government. Step by step, they were trying to put some pressure on TV channels, first of all. After that, on some newspapers. They have changed the owners of the channels and the newspapers. And the situation has changed. And now, for example, it depends on you, actually. If you are going to say what you do think, you will, anyway, you will find the way to do it. Because there is still an internet resource which is huge. And I must say that this policy actually influenced greatly the interest of the people for the TV channels or for the radio stations which belong to the state. So the people just don't want to watch the TV anymore. They prefer to get the information from the internet resources. Mm-hmm.
So when you describe these steps taken back in terms of freedom of expression, expressing your ideas as writers or TV broadcasters, radio people, how far back, compare that to the old Soviet Union model.
Yeah.
Is it, how many steps away are we from that?
I would say that the main difference is that in the former Soviet Union, we didn't have any internet. Now we do have it. So if you suffer because there is no freedom of speech, you can compensate it in some way. And this is a huge resource, actually. And we have a lot of blogs and bloggers who are fighting for their right of free speech and so on. But at the same time, if we are comparing the TV channels from the former Soviet Union and nowadays, they are pretty similar, especially the news programs, I would say. Everything is okay, and can you imagine even if there are some kind of a collapse like these wildfires in Russia? The rating of our main politicians is quite the same. They could lose something like 3 or 4%, which is nothing if you have 80 or 80 something. So this is a kind of the attitude of the population to the power itself, because during the 90s they were very, very difficult years for us. And the population didn't have enough opportunities to earn the money and to feed their families, and it was very painful for the most of the people. And actually, they didn't get used to such thing as freedom, as the main value. And that is why now it was so easy for the power and for the government to support them financially and at the same time to get it right from the population, the right of thinking, the right of responsibility for their own actions. And actually, there are no so many people who suffer because we don't have the real elections. Oh, this is something amazing. Well, that is why I could say once again, we have an unpredictable past and unpredictable future, because now it occurred that our past was not that bad. I mean, during the 30s or 40s of the previous century, it occurs that it was more or less okay. And
that's the perception.
Yeah, the perception which was actually translated by our official mass media.
I see.
Pretty much.
So this is a romantic view of the era, the Stalinist era.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And people are believing that, even though you're saying that this doesn't compare to the Stalinist era.
Yeah, I would say that the people would like to have something which they prefer to call an order instead of disorder of the 90s. Yeah. This order, if they have it, there is a kind of illusion of stability. Mm-hmm. If there are even a lot of wildfires everywhere and a lot of people just dying in Moscow because of these heats, And at the same time, the mayor of Moscow is somewhere else. He's somewhere abroad, and he's on his vacations, and he's not going to come back until the vacations are over, you know. And it is something incredible in comparison with what we could have several years ago, because they are not that much depend on the electorate. They depend much more on Kremlin. So this is the difference.
Alan Cherchesov is a fiction writer from Russia, one of the International Writing Program's residents. 38, I believe, coming this year from 30 different countries are now in Iowa, have been here for several days. If you just tuned in, Alan Cherchesov is our guest, along with Hinamwana Baker from New Zealand. Also, we have H.M. Naqvi from Pakistan. If you'd like to join our conversation, if you have a question for one of our writers from Pakistan, Russia, or New Zealand, or a question about their countries, join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Hinamwana, I wanted to go to you because I was at the welcoming party for the International Writing Program and witnessed some of your, you delve into the native culture of New Zealand in song as well. I wonder if I could ask you to share with us a bit of the song of the native people of New Zealand. And tell us
what... No, we know wa. Te mutunga ke mai nei o te mana ki tanga. He mihi no te ngākau. He kupu no te manawa, no koto ano te mana. Koia kaya koto e
beautiful. Hinamwana Baker.
Sorry to interrupt you.
Thank you for so much. Right on the spot here, just asking you to do that. Now, that was so beautiful. What is the some of the translation of that that song is about?
It's really I composed it myself, so the language is Maori, but the tune is very much a contemporary one because that's more my area. So it just acknowledges we're big on hospitality, Maori culture. So I've experienced a lot of that since I've been here. So it's really just an acknowledgement of thanking the people who are hosting us, and sending words from the heart, words from the lips. Mm-hmm. Thanking everyone who's supporting as well from far and wide. Nor wee wee nor wawa.
Have you been in the United States before?
This is my first time.
As a poet, what interests you most about American literature, the scene?
Well, the poetry mainly, music too. Joan Baez is playing here soon, so I'll be getting along to that. I kind of idolize a lot of American poets, of course, none of which I can think of right now. But Sharon Olds, I had a Sharon Olds feast when I was doing my MA in Wellington at Victoria University. Some Louise Gluck and those kinds of people. Just I guess I'm more interested in experimental poetry and what might be called experimental poetry as well, and abstract sound. I'm a sound artist as well. So,
does your poetry, your art, have anything to say, a nexus with the politics of our world?
Yes, perhaps not overtly. Like I avoid what we call kaupapa art or kaupapa poetry, kaupapa music in New Zealand, which is maybe slightly more polemic, more didactic. I'm not really one of of that crowd, but I do, there are things that move me. The whole 9/11 thing, the terrorism issue has affected Māori in particular in New Zealand quite hugely. One of the tribes, more remote tribes in Te Uruwera, which is in central North Island, it's an area which has been a little more untouched than some of the other areas by colonisation. They were raided 2 years ago now by the police, but a special squad set up for anti-terrorism operations, none of which really happened in New Zealand, I've got to be honest. And it had the feeling about it of justifying their salaries coming from a huge fund which was established after 9/11 happened over here. So the people were dragged out of their homes, their houses were wrecked, they were held at gunpoint in the middle of the night. These are Māori people living in a very remote community.
And the fear was what? That they would inciting some violence?
Yeah, the fear was, Tūhoe have always owned guns. Like, it's not a gun culture in New Zealand in the way that maybe it more is here. So Tūhoe people have always owned guns, they've always used guns because their territory is very mountainous and difficult to, places are difficult to access. So they use guns as signals, they use guns since their advent really in New Zealand. They've used guns in more traditional ways, it sounds strange, but they've become part of the Tūhoetanga or Tūhoe culture. And they run camps there to teach kids how to hunt and how to live on the land. One of their leaders, one of their, I guess, activist leaders, Wairere Tamaiti, has been unpopular with the government many times for protesting about land confiscations and land issues and sovereignty. So all of those things kind of coalesced in unfortunate ways, and they were, they were attacked on October 15th, 2007. Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of links, unexpected links perhaps between Māori people or native culture a long way away and things that happen over here. So.
Hinemoana Baker is a poet from New Zealand, one of our group today. I wanted to turn, before we have a break in a couple minutes, to H.M. Naqvi from Pakistan. Your debut novel, Homeboy, published in 2009, is out. And I'm interested in to see in your earlier comments how the events, the conflict in the region, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and post 9/11 world, in more depth, shaped this novel.
Well, September 11th affected Pakistan in a very profound way. Pakistan has, for the last 30 years, been contending with a very porous border. And so the last time there was, when the Soviets were in Afghanistan, that had a profound effect on Pakistan, because drugs and arms flowed through this porous border. After 9/11, with Operation Enduring Freedom, there was again this sort of exodus from Afghanistan. And the exodus was comprised of the Taliban. And so as a result, the north became unstable. North of Pakistan became unstable. And so it was, the events here affected Pakistan in a very real, meaningful, tangible way.
We have to take a short break. H.M. Naqvi with us, a writer from Pakistan, Alan Cherchesov from Russia, Hinemoana Baker from New Zealand, also International Writing Program Director Christopher Merrill with us. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. When we come back, I'd like to ask H.M. Naqvi to share some beat poetry, some poetry that worked into your novel. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thank you for joining us over the noon hour today. We're talking with visiting writers from around the world. We couldn't get them all here. There are 38 of them visiting Iowa over the next 10 weeks. We have a writer from Russia, from Pakistan, from New Zealand with us in the studio, talking about how their work is informed by current events, what they hope to accomplish during their 10 weeks in Iowa. Since 1967, more than 1,200 writers from more than 120 countries have attended the University of Iowa's International Writing Program. We have with us from Russia Alan Cherchesov and H.M. Naqvi from Pakistan, Hinamwana Baker, a poet from New Zealand, along with IWP Director Christopher Merrill. And if you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100 or the exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Before the break, we were talking to H.M. Naqvi about his debut novel, Homeboy, published by Random House in 2009, and how that fits into the context of the conflict, all the things that the United States, Pakistan, this area has experienced since 9/11. H.M., can I ask you to pick up with the story of how your novel was created in this context?
Yes. The novel takes place in New York, not Pakistan. But what I was talking about, the Operation Enduring Freedom had a profound effect on Pakistan. We, for instance, had never experienced a suicide bomber on our territory before before Operation Enduring Freedom. The sort of terrorism that Pakistan has seen in the last 9 years commenced in 2002. So there was a lot of, arms and terrorism that flowed from the north into the country, and as a result, we have suffered. The novel itself is based in New York, and it has a tangential connection to Pakistan. It is more a coming of age story in the way Catcher in the Rye is a coming of age story. These young men do come of age in this book, but are contending with changed political realities. So whereas before they thought themselves as Renaissance men, as boulevardiers, as raconteurs, they were compelled to reimagine themselves since the world had changed. It's strange for them to contend with these exogenous shocks of history as young men. Tom Sawyer didn't have to deal with these historic vicissitudes when he was growing up. When these guys are growing up, they've got to deal with history.
Mm-hmm. So give us an idea, since you said the suicide bombings began in Pakistan in 2002. How has that shaped the modern Pakistani mindset, reshaped it?
Pakistanis are a sort of tough people, and I mean, it's they have an innate ability to deal with this variety of calamity. And so, life in Karachi continues fine. Everyday life in Pakistan is not defined by violence. You've got the beautiful, a lovely coastline. People are out on the beach every night. You can get a good beer in Karachi at 2 in the morning, which you can't in many places around the world. Mm-hmm. And Karachi is a vast city. It's one of the largest cities in the world. It's 20 million people, and there's this wonderful energy that I feel is very similar in ways to New York's energy. And in that way, there is a connection between life in contemporary Karachi and life in contemporary New York.
How has Pakistani's view of America and Americans changed since 9/11?
Perceptions are not static, and Americans and Pakistanis have worked very closely together at various junctures of history. And at this juncture of history, where we are experiencing this flood of biblical proportion, and America is front and center in the relief efforts, there is obviously a very human appreciation of American relief efforts, and perceptions are tied to these very tangible actions. They don't exist in a vacuum, and you know this flood. We've been helped by the United States in a very meaningful way.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask Chris Merrill, the director, in a moment just about the mission of the IWP. We're talking with International Writing Program resident writers for this year. That was H.M. Naqvi, a writer from Pakistan. Alan Cherchesov is with us as well from Russia. Hinamwana Baker from New Zealand. Chris, before I do ask you, I want to get in a caller. Chuck is calling from Coralville. Good afternoon, Chuck. Chuck, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yes, go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Thank you. I just wanted to welcome Alan back to Iowa. I hope he's able to accomplish what he hopes to here.
Oh, thank you very much.
You know our Russian writer.
Yes, we've been acquainted before.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true.
And this is one of the things. Thank you, Jay. This is one of the things that dovetails nicely into what I'd ask Chris Merrill about. Is this is not only an experience that enriches the writers who come, but enriches the landscape here in Iowa because there are a lot of events. How do the events fit in with the mission that the IWP has for the writers and for the people of Iowa?
Well, Ben, in certain ways you're seeing how that mission plays out just in the conversation here today with writers from New Zealand, Russia, and Pakistan sharing insights about their own countries. And those insights are integral to what we try to do. We want to get beyond what you see on TV or on the newspaper to really understand what life is like in each place. And we believe that the best way to do that is through creative writing work, novels and poems and plays and stories. That's the sort of thing that goes on during the 10 weeks that the writers are in Iowa City. We have a number of public events, an average of 4 or 5 every week. If you go to our website, iwp.uiowa.edu, you'll find the writers' biographies, samples of their work, and a huge variety of public events. Tonight, H.M. Naqvi will be reading from his new novel with a poet from Poland. They'll be reading at Prairie Lights at 7 o'clock. On Thursday night, 2 Irish poets are coming to town to read. On Friday at the public library, we'll have a panel on the sense of place with writers from as such different places as England, the Philippines, and the Netherlands by way of Albania.
Mm.
We have readings at Prairie Lights on Sunday afternoons. We have readings at the Shambaugh House up on 430 North Clinton on Friday afternoons. All free, all open to the public, and it's a chance to interact with the writers. Alan was here a couple of years ago on an open world delegation with other Russian writers, and that's how we got to know him and got to know what a marvelous writer he is. And we're so happy to have him back with us for the full time of the residency.
And once again, a lot more of the information to be found on the IWP website if you just put your browser on your search on International Writing Program, yep. Iowa. You will find it.
Yep.
Chuck in Coralville, back to you. You had a question as well as a welcome back for Alan.
Yes, I just wondered how he and his family have done with all the distress, the fires around Moscow, and then the political and disruptions in the Caucasus.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Chuck, and it would be great to see you again. Well, fortunately, we don't live in Moscow, so that is why we didn't suffer, I mean my family and my closest people, from these wildfires. As for the situation in Caucasus, every single day we have some terrorist attacks and we have a lot of policemen there, and everything is rather tense, but this is the life you have to use to if you don't want to leave your home. So I don't think that there are some significant signs that the situation in the Northern Caucasus could be much better than it is now. And actually, there are so many signs that, for instance, in Dagestan, it is even worse than it was before, maybe 1 or 2 years ago. And The same is about other small republics in the Northern Caucasus. Fortunately, in North Ossetia, we didn't have so many bombing attacks from the people who are blowing them up, but we did have them, and we did have them a lot when you have something like that just 200 meters from your home. It's rather stressful, and I would say it's frightening, actually. Well, and if we are talking about the nowadays Russia and its relationship with the United States, it's a very interesting situation, I would say, because on one hand, there is an official point of view that we have to make some kind of reloading of our relations, our relationship.
A resetting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, resetting them. And on the other hand, there is some political rhetorics which is very much anti-American. And I mean not just the rhetorics of some small newspapers or some small radio stations. It is almost official states channels who are almost every day trying to find something bad about the United States and its policy. Actually, they do have some very good examples. And believe me, the people in Russia who were maybe the greatest supporters of the United States in the late 80s and in the beginning of the 90s, we were in love with the United States, actually. The people had been waiting for some kind of assistance, some kind of help, some kind of friendship, I would say. And finally, they didn't receive what they expected. And that is why it's a kind of revenge, you know. America is still number one in the world. America is still very powerful. And it is problematic to say something like that about nowadays Russia. That is why they're trying to show themselves as a very powerful state. Okay, we have a lot of troubles inside, but we are still powerful, which means that there are a lot of countries abroad who are frightening, and they are actually scared by Russia. And some people do like it, you know. And the other thing is, which we don't accept at all, me, for instance, I love America, and I do love its literature, its culture. And actually, my specialty was the American literature and culture of the 20th century. But I would say it's not good when you see the President of the United States who, in some kind of buddy-buddy manners, patronizing manners, he's just clapping the shoulder of your own president. You know, it's okay for the Americans to see it, but not for Russians. Mm. Okay, he has a great advantage in his height, but anyway, it's something which disturbs people very, very much. So I would suggest, just for the American politicians, not to be that much chummy in their manners, you know.
Okay. Alan Cherchesov is from Russia. He's a writer, along with H.M. Naqvi from Pakistan and Hinawana Baker from New Zealand. And they are three of the 38 international writers, writers from around the world coming are now in residence in Iowa to take them, go through the Iowa International Writing Program residency. And Chris Merrill, the director of that program, is with us as well. We have a few minutes left on our program. And I wanted to ask about some interesting things about your work habits. H.M. Naqvi, you have taught at Boston University, other places as well, but you have a particular regime of writing that you are actually a nocturnal type of writer. You stay up the entire night. Is that true?
Yeah, I wrote Homeboy from 2003 to 2007, and I think being part of a writer is being a writer doesn't only involve the construction of sentences, but it has to it involves an understanding of how you function, what's your way of being, and I realized that I was unable to write in broad daylight, and so for the last 7 years, I basically work till 6 in the morning. I sleep till 2. I have breakfast at about 3. And
you're a teenager, actually, then, aren't you?
And so I'd like to think a bit more productive.
I might note that that was pretty much the Turkish novelist Orhan Pamuk's schedule when he was here, and it worked out for him. He won the Nobel Prize.
Mm-hmm. Right. What is it about? What is it about the nighttime? I was just jesting, having a little joke there, of course. But how? What is it about the nighttime that suits your mind? You get into the writing mode.
One is able to sort of block out. There's no noise at night. You know, there's literally and figuratively speaking, there's the phone doesn't ring, the doorbell doesn't ring, and you aren't. You don't have to adhere to the sort of responsibilities that you do during the day. You don't have to pay bills. You don't have to go to the post office. So, you know, we are anxious creatures, I find in the dead of night, I'm anxious just to write.
Hmm. You mentioned that earlier in the program you're a slam poet. You've created some slam poetry. I wonder if, as we get close to the end of the hour, if you would like to share some of your slam poetry with us.
Homeboy's genesis was at a bar in the Bowery called CBGB's, which, of course, was integral in the punk rock movement. And in the U.S., the Sex Pistols, I think, came out of CBGB's. They had they would host a poetry slam every Sunday night, and every Sunday night I'd be 4 drinks into the evening, scrawling on the back of cocktail napkins. And I think, if I remember correctly, and I could be mistaken, the first few lines of Homeboy were scrawled on the back of a cocktail napkin that I retrieved weeks later and then subsequently transcribed. But from those days, I used to recite a poem called I Am Intimate With My Brush. It goes something like this. I am intimate with my brush. It licks the night off my teeth when I stand taut, each hair standing sentinel on cold winter days that shave my face clean in a mirror in a world of half a toilet bowl and a $2 shower curtain undulating behind me like blue pastures of arabesque flowers. But the night, it lingers in my hair, in the smell of sweat on my chest, in my clenched eyes, in my vagabond face. For vagrant am I in the dark of night, vagrant in heart, vagrant in mind. Under the sallow moon, I am vagrant at night. I have slept with a fury in my bed among the passing nights. I'm intimate with my brush. I stand like a fish on the floor, the dog barking the fall of the sky. It licks the long dry spill off when I wasted, when I smoke my throat dry and black to the time I teetered over before it rained with tap water consistency and ragged as the towel. It holds water no more. Faceless are the tiles, splintered the door. I am intimate with my brush. It knows my teeth like a lover. So when I leave for the day with a yearning for night through noises and voices and whines of tongues heavy with talk, eyes lined with dirt when the worm stirred dirt beneath my skin, I shall return to fulfill unrequited love.
H.M. Naqvi, poetry for us over the noon hour here on The Exchange. Marvelous. H.M. Naqvi from Karachi, Pakistan, one of the resident writers at the International Writing Program this year. It's been such a great time to have you this hour here. Alan Cherchesov and Hinamwana Baker, Christopher Merrill. Any? You've only been in Iowa for a few days. Any first impressions, things that surprised you?
I have written a novel of 70,000-80,000 words, but have difficulty expressing how fabulous this program is, the hospitality that we've been extended is sort of singular, and this little I often feel at night that I wish I could be in the IWP, suspended in this yeah. in this world for the remainder of my life.
Yeah. You'll have to talk to the director, Chris Merrill, about that. Chris, remind us how people can find out more about what's coming up in the next few weeks and meet some of these fabulous writers you brought in.
Go to our website, iwp.uiowa.edu. You'll find biographies of the writers, samples of their writing, and a full schedule of events, all of which are free and open to the public.
Christopher Merrill, IWP Director, and Hinamwana Baker, H.M. Naqvi, Alan Cherchesov, thank you very much for joining us this hour. The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio. Talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. And our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.